Watch. Today I'm joined by Heather Lanigan, country manager for South Asia at USTDA. For the rest of this interview, we will call her the country manager because that's way funnier. USTDA is the U.S. Trade Development Authority. Yes, am I doing it right?
Agency.
All right. And for every $1 of U.S. investment, my favorite statistic in D.C., $85 return on investment, which is incredible. So, Heather, thanks for joining us. You are not our first USTDA guest on What's Next, but we're happy to have you.
Thank you very much for having me.
So, Heather, we're going to talk about the Smart Cities Initiative, and specifically the work you're doing in South Asia and India. But before we even get there, what is the Smart Cities Initiative?
That's a great question, Maggie. And what's really interesting about smart cities is I think everyone has their own definition. My definition, Heather's personal definition, is smart cities utilize technology to enhance livability for its citizens and increase operational efficiencies within a city. And there's so many reasons that cities are investing in these technologies, but that's, I think, the value we have at USTDA is to work with our partners overseas in helping them to achieve their objectives.
So before anyone, you know, raises an eyebrow and is like, why is this on What's Next, which is a security podcast. As many people know, ASP does a lot of work in resilience and emergency preparedness response, whether it's related to climate, energy, or general national security strategies. So the Smart Cities Initiative, it sounds like from what you're saying, kind of looks on building that resilience into the system before you have a problem, which is, of course, in everyone's best interest, right?
Absolutely. And I think what's, we have an opportunity. There's also a challenge. By, I think, 2050, it's predicted that 6 billion people will live in urban environments.
Wow.
And so it's time to start planning for that. And I think that, I mean, the world is vast. Every country is very different. But the more we can prepare for that and the more we can adapt and be ready for issues related to climate change or just changing populations, the better we will serve our citizens. And so I think that's where we are right now. We're at a nexus where there's so much opportunity and great technologies, but also just increased awareness of why it's important for citizens to be engaged and cities to provide for their citizens.
So you mentioned before we started recording that smart cities, it looks different in each place, right?
It does.
And you mentioned, you know, you were recently at a conference in Chicago, but you work primarily in India on this particular program. So what did you see in Chicago? What do you see in India? And how much overlap is there?
So it's interesting. I mean, I think that a city like Chicago, of course, is a very large U.S. city. And there's obviously fantastic architecture. There's an old history there. And so Chicago will continue to grow as well. Certainly there's really good infrastructure, great metro system. It's very clean. And so Chicago is building upon a foundation that's already really great for its citizens. It was funny, and you know, we were talking to the city of Chicago about their 311 service, where citizens can call in and address any complaints they have or ask questions. I was there on Wednesday, so right before the Cubs game. And so they were saying, if you want to call and get the Cubs score, you can call 311.
Oh, that's great.
It is great. If you want to call about an accident, call 311. And so that's the city's way of addressing, you know, immediately responding to citizens, tracking things that need to happen, whether it's street repairs or just getting a sense of, you know, if the city's being responsive. And that was really interesting. I was with two of our colleagues from India, and they were really interested in that. They said, that's just such a novel concept. I mean, it's fairly easy to set up. And the city said, absolutely. I mean, it's a way that we can respond. It's fairly, it helps divert from 911, which is critical.
Really important.
But also helps us to, you know, gain a sense of what's happening. And I, when I was taking a cab to the airport yesterday, all over the cab, it said, call 311, let us know how your driver is, compliments or complaints. So that was really interesting. So I think the city of Chicago, of course, I mean, they have a strong foundation, but they're always looking to improve. We did a site visit to a place called UI Labs, so University of Illinois, and they're working with the city of Chicago and the U.S. private sector, whether it's startups or established companies, very large companies, to help be a test bed for smart city technologies and projects in the city of Chicago. So right now they're looking at underground mapping of the underground to make sure that they know what's happening, so to prepare for flooding and to prepare for other infrastructure development. So that's happening in Chicago. India is a very different case, and every city in India is a very different case, just like the United States.
It's an enormous country.
It's an enormous country. But what's really interesting is, so Prime Minister Modi, about 2 years ago, started really discussing smart cities. And developed and developing world and emerging economies, the investment in smart cities can be seen as an opportunity to spur economic growth and provide for its citizens as well, just like the United States. And so we've been working really closely with India. And the government of India launched something called the Smart Cities Initiative. And then they created the Smart Cities Challenge, which was a competition for 100 cities across the country to compete for seed funding from the central government, which has been fascinating to see.
Yeah.
Because it's just enough money to get off the ground, but a lot more money is required to actually implement. But the competition that it has created and the awareness of not only investing in technology, but just engaging citizens.
Yeah.
Is phenomenal. And so what we're seeing across India is just a lot of excitement, a lot of engagement from citizens. And USTDA in particular, we signed MOUs with three state governments to support smart city development. And that was in support of President Obama and Prime Minister Modi's agreement to cooperate. So we have been working since 2015, January 2015, in fact, almost 2 years, with three states, and focusing on three cities they've selected for USTDA to help connect US technologies and services to the smart city planning underway.
So what kind of US businesses are involved in that particular part of the program?
So as we discussed earlier, smart cities is so vast.
Yeah.
So everything from the planning for companies like AECOM, who we're working with, to technology integrators like IBM's and Cisco's of the world, to companies that have the sensors to start gathering information, whether it's on transportation or on weather or the atmosphere. There's a vast array of technologies that all feed in together to help plan for smart city development. What USTDA is, why we're involved in particular, is that we think the planning is really important. As an agency, we support priority infrastructure development, and we're trying to spur economic growth. But it's very important, if you're thinking 50 years down the line, how to plan for that. And that's one of the great benefits of the U.S. private sector and also USTDA's expertise, is that we have the right tools for that. And so we've been working very closely with AECOM, as mentioned, one of the cities, and other big companies to help the planning aspects. But I've actually been tracking, just because it keeps growing. I've talked to 67 U.S. companies that are focused on the three cities we're working in, and three states.
Wow.
So it's all different stages. I mean, I think that we have to think of the planning first, because that's really important.
Sure.
Because if you're looking at where you want to be in 2030, you have to have a great foundation to be able to build upon that. And then, of course, we're talking the technology integrators. So there's a lot of opportunity for U.S. companies.
So something else we were talking about that everyone else is talking about also is, of course, the Metro meltdown in Washington, D.C. and we both live fairly close to 16th Street and kind of commented on, the traffic is not as bad on 16th Street as we were all waiting for it to be, especially now with, red line troubles. And there's a smart cities component to that, right? And a security component, which we'll get to next. But so you commented about the app Waze.
Mm-hmm.
So is that what the Smart Cities Initiative is looking at, is how do you reroute traffic when your metro meltdown?
Well, that certainly is a good benefit to smart cities planning, right? And so transportation is one of the big pillars of smart city development. I mean, it's integral. The mobility component is very important. People need to get to work, to get to see their personal lives. And having urban transport is very important. It obviously reduces car congestion. It's great for the economy. But let's take D.C., actually. I mean, it's certainly it's a hot topic.
Sure.
And maybe the metro isn't running as frequently or isn't running at all sometimes, but at least we know when it's running.
Right.
So we have that technology. And as we were discussing, I live on 16th Street, and I rely on NextBus for every movement. It's whether I have coffee before I leave or if I'm going to get to a meeting on time. But it is very accurate. So mm-hmm. while we can't certainly plan for it when the system's getting congested and the right. trains aren't working, we do know we have predictability and can plan our ways. And then speaking of ways, I mean, the driving app Waze is a really effective tool. It will reroute you if there's an accident or if there's a lot of congestion. So cities can drive traffic in different ways. And so that's very important as well. So it's just, I think, things that we take for granted that we all want a metro system that functions.
Right.
But there are so many things that are happening on the side with a lot of interesting startups. I mean, NextBus, those other apps are done by, some of them are very small technology companies that have really cool technology that help grow our city and help provide for us.
Right. And, from ASP's perspective, looking at preparedness, resilience, logistics is important generally. As someone who works for flag officers, my entire life is logistics. Mm-hmm. And it's important that, like you said, we know when the next bus is coming. It may not be coming when you want it to be there, but it is in fact coming, and here's when it's going to get here. Now you are thinking about these three cities in India that you're working on. Mm-hmm. What are their transportation systems like, and how is that creating challenges and opportunities for them?
That's also really interesting. So the three cities we're working in are very different. One is named Vishakhapatnam. It's on the coast. It's beautiful, actually. You should take a look at it. Two other cities are Ajmer and Allahabad, and they're also equally beautiful. They're in the middle of the country. They're very important cultural heritage sites. Mm-hmm. So these three cities have different opportunities. They have different challenges, populations, density. But they're all planning, certainly, for transportation projects. I'll take Vishakhapatnam, actually, which we also call VISAG for short. And they already have a bus rapid transit program. It's just started, and it's not really functional. People don't really know what it means or why it's important. But it's not highly functioning. So people mm-hmm. are still taking cars or using rickshaws, and the streets are still congested. So you have rickshaws that are crowding, a central, I call them rotary, I'm from Boston, or a traffic circle. And then you have a lot of cars, you have buses that are smaller buses, and then you have bigger buses. They're not all working together very well right now. And so what Vishakhapatnam is doing is they're trying to plan that a little bit better. They want people to use the city buses because it will help them get to places more quickly. It will help take people off the road in cars.
Sure.
And so that's something that's very important to them. I was talking to our colleagues from Vishakhapatnam in Chicago, and one thing that's really important to them is connecting to the citizenry. Mm-hmm. So you have, in any city, you have a vast array of citizens, and what they've been really focused on is the citizens that actually don't have access to technology, mm-hmm. that don't know, and just as we've spoken about, not everyone knows why a smart city or smart apps are important, and a lot of people don't have apps.
Right.
And so what they're doing right now is they're working on a campaign. They're working in some of the, as they call it, slums, trying to help people understand why it's important. So they're going to do a campaign where they choose somebody and show a day in the life using a bus rapid transit, mm-hmm. how it gets them out of the community, how it connects them and integrates them more and allows for them to be engaged, not just stuck because they don't have transit or because they can't get somewhere, but why it's important. And so I think that there's many different things underway in Vishakhapatnam and in Ajmer and Allahabad, but the most important thing is they're trying to grow these cities to be clean, efficient, and also in service to other citizens. And I think it's fascinating what's happening.
So are there certain U.S. companies that have come to you or are involved in this project that, maybe in that first initial conversation, you were like, I haven't the slightest idea why you want to be involved in this. And now several months or years, like you said, 2 years down the line, you're like, no, I can't imagine doing this project without you.
It's interesting. So many U.S. companies that you think of as traditional companies, so whether it's a car service company or someone was actually just mentioning that, not necessarily U.S. companies, but BMW and other companies are looking at smart city businesses because their business may have to change because things are changing. So what I would say is I'm surprised by some of the companies I wouldn't pin as smart city companies. Mm-hmm. Credit card companies, which of course they're smart city companies. E-commerce is so important, but they need the platforms that are secure to be able to do transactions. So one of them I actually have had a great relationship with is MasterCard. They're doing a lot in India. And it's really important if you think about that, yeah. is to have people to be able to use their cards in a secure way and also build upon that, because it's not just about their credit cards. They do a lot more than that.
Right. I mean, and you think about not just somebody's ability to purchase something and swipe their MasterCard, mm-hmm. it's the ability of the vendor to accept that money, right? This is feeding in the local economy, creating more opportunity, more mobility, greater stability, et cetera, et cetera. And it's run by the private sector, right? Which is what we hope for.
Absolutely, yeah.
And it's interesting to me, you know, I kind of, so we've had Keith on, right? Country manager for Latin America, mm-hmm. Talking more about energy. And I think for a lot of people, they hear energy and the connection is now much stronger to security. But this is harder to understand for some. So when you talk to people about why smart cities is important for kind of overall stability and well-being, how do you have that conversation?
Well, there are many components, and energy is actually one of the components. If there's I can share a couple of areas where I think smart cities are really important, and there's many more. As mentioned, everyone has their own definition, but energy, transportation, telecom, healthcare, education, green spaces, emergency management. These are all part of smart city planning. Think about anything that goes into urban planning in developing cities. The critical infrastructure, the more it's connected, the better a city can respond and prepare. Mm-hmm. We don't see that. So we don't understand how it's working. But for example, I mean, if we look at if there's a flood happening, we may not like the beeping that happens all throughout our offices or any public space, but we know a flood's coming or a flood warning, and we can prepare for that, get inside, you know, don't go somewhere that evening. That's really important. But if something happens, if there's an accident or something that we don't have a warning for, to be able to respond to that in an efficient way, to know that you need a fire truck, you need a couple of ambulances, the police should be there, but have a central way of communicating that is really important, because minutes matter. And the quicker you can get there, the more efficient you can get there, the better you're going to serve whether it's citizens or, you know, the city is very important. It also, I mean, a benefit on the side is it also saves money. It creates efficiencies. So you don't have multiple agencies responding. So I think that it's important to think of smart cities in a way to be able to plan to mitigate disaster. As we discussed when I was in Chicago, they're talking about past emergencies they've had, they haven't been able to plan for it. But they were getting ready for the Cubs game. And they also knew that they're going to have a lot of hopefully excited people, which they did. Yeah. And they needed to be able to make sure that they had the police force ready. They were able to provide for its citizens. And so that's really important. But I think when something happens, you have to be able to respond very quickly. And that's where it comes in.
You know, at a recent ASP event with Lloyd's of London, we talked about this. You know, cities in the crosshair. You know, how do you make a case for investing in resilience and kind of proactive rather than reactive? And Daniel Linsky, who the name may ring a bell, was the chief of police in Boston during the marathon bombing, spoke at the event and talked about what he learned from responding to the bombing and then in Watertown, and how important a central communication hub is. And to hear that U.S. companies through USTDA are helping to invest and build these systems on the other side of the world in three cities in India is really exciting from a security perspective, but also from a, you know, economics perspective, right? There, as I mentioned before, you know, USTDA has one of the greatest impact statistics, right? For every $1 out, $85 in, which is incredible. So what is it that you hear from companies, you know, like MasterCard or Cisco or IBM? These are, I don't want to say repeat offenders, but they come back to you guys, right? You work with a lot of the same partners, big companies, small companies, everyone in between, across the different projects you're working on, and why do you think they keep coming back?
I think what's important is that USTDA, is, you know, we're very involved with projects around the world, whether it's smart cities or energy or transportation or telecom. And why I think we're valuable is that we work with the U.S. private sector. I mean, the U.S. technologies and services, I think, are the best in the world. So we offer, we connect our partners to U.S. technologies and services. And certainly these companies are all over the world, many of the big ones, and even the smaller ones, and they don't always need us.
Right.
But I think when you come to a project like smart cities, what's really important, and I'll take India as an example, is that we have overarching MOUs with three states and cities to work together. And we have an understanding of the timeline for implementation. We're trying to ensure that when the cities develop their RFPs and procurement models, that they're value-based and that U.S. companies can compete. Because as you mentioned earlier, it's actually very expensive. Some of these technologies and thinking about 30 years from now is one thing, but also being able to pay for something that you think is
that
really
important. That tends to be important.
It's really important. It's really challenging. So USTDA, we're working with these cities and helping them to think about their planning and making sure that they're planning and investing in things that are sustainable. And that's where I think it's really important. And that's why U.S. companies come back to us, because we're creating this platform and we work very closely with the cities. We have technical advisors that visit the cities several times a month, have a pulse of what's going on. While it's exciting, there's a lot also happening. And to the cities we're working in are right now trying to move from their vision, which is great. The vision of Vishakhapatnam is to be a clean commerce capital, which is big. And there's
enormous with a great alliteration.
It is great. It's a good tagline. And the other cities have similar goals, but we're trying to get them there. And right. So it's a long process, but we have a sense of what's going on the ground. We have great relationships, and we're able to work with U.S. industry to connect them to our partners. And that's actually why, you know, when we were in Chicago, we had two of our partners from Vishakhapatnam join us, because they have an excellent story. And it's not they can tell a story for their cities, but they can also tell a story for India and why it's so important, what they need. And they obviously, with financing, public-private partnerships are really important, because if you want a bus rapid transit and you want it to be efficient, you need some private sector partners to help you run that.
Yeah, I think that's probably why, what is that wonderful bus in D.C. that's not WMATA?
Circulator.
I wonder if that's why everyone loves Circulator. that and because it goes to Georgetown. So we always ask the same last question of our guests on what's next, and we try to frame it in the context of whatever it is that we're talking about. So I think to you, Heather, I'll ask, what do you think is next for smart cities generally, but also kind of really focusing in on the three cities we've been talking about, the progress you've seen and the visions you all are working to implement. What do you think the world will look like for them in 2030 or in 2020 or in 2050?
Well, that is a hard question,
Maggie. It's always a hard question, and people stare blankly back at me, but I think you'd be surprised, you know?
Right. Well, I think one thing that I think is really important and probably hasn't caught on even here is that the idea of smart cities is to connect citizens to city operations. And so right now, I think it's sometimes a one-way street. We get data from the next bus to know our bus. We know when a storm is coming, but we don't always participate back. Mm-hmm. I think we were talking earlier in Dubai, there's a happiness factor. And so you all around the city, you press a button, whether it's a big smiley face, a frown, or somewhat a middle smiley face, to share your feedback. I think what we're going to see across the world are more engaged citizens. And it may not just be through technology, maybe through greater, you know, town hall meetings. But I think what's happening, what's really important, thinking about all over the world, thinking about security. Certainly, I mentioned before, I used to work in the Middle East. Having right. the opportunity for citizens to have a voice,
right.
to be able to frame projects is really important, and to be able to respond and help their city evolve. I think that is going to be the next thing. I mean, we may have flying cars.
But it almost doesn't matter if only one voice is heard in building the flying cars, right?
Right. So I think we're going to see things that are absolutely outstanding with technology that we couldn't possibly imagine in 5 years from now or a year from now. So that's something. I mean, can't predict the technologies. I wish I could. I probably would start thinking of some but to do on my own. But I think the major shift is hopefully citizen engagement here in the United States and across the world. For our cities that we're working in, I think I think that they'll implement their visions. And they're all very different. I didn't speak much about Ajmer and Allahabad, but these cities are of incredible importance to India for heritage reasons. And they have pilgrims that come multiple times a year or every 10 years for very important religious rites. And right now, people come because they will go no matter what, but they aren't staying there. They aren't feeding the economic growth of the city because there isn't infrastructure. And so I think what we're going to see is cities that are taking advantage of their natural strengths. In India, I hope that's what will happen, the three cities we're working with and across the country. There's so much that these cities offer. And I hope that they'll enhance citizen services. I hope they'll take advantage of what they offer to the country, to international visitors. And I hope, obviously, that there'll be economic growth. But I can't wait to see. These people that we're working with, our partners, are absolutely amazing and inspiring. And I love the opportunity to work with them.
That's awesome. And we love having you guys on What's Next to hear about it. So, Heather, thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Maggie.
This has been What's Next from American Security Project and Maggie Feldman-Pilch.